That Steve Glover is my next guest may come as a bit of a surprise to regular listeners and probably to Mr. Glover as well, because as ambitious as he was when he was a kid, he never aspired to be interviewed on a show like this. But he has been a frequent radio guest, mostly with Howard Stern. And although I've been accused of being a jackass from time to time by the occasional unhappy listener, I was only vaguely familiar with the very popular show on MTV called Jackass, and which Steve-O starred, and which inspired three extremely successful spin-off movies, the last one being Jackass 3D. He's also starred in the MTV show Wild Boys. Steve-O, who's known for his outrageous stunts and pranks, has written a memoir with the help of David Peisner called Steve-O Born Idiot.
Professional Idiot, a memoir.
It's published by Hyperion, and it tells the story of his complicated childhood, his meteoric rise, his addiction, and recovery. Welcome to our show.
Well, thank you for having me.
Well, I just proved that I'm a professional idiot. My staff warned me about you, told me not to let any of your friends or entourage come into the studio with you. Do I need to worry? You're not going to blow a fireball at me at some point,
are you? No. I'm wondering what... I mean, certainly in the past, you wouldn't have wanted me or my friends anywhere near you. But I don't even travel with an entourage, so it's not a concern.
Your book recounts all your wildness and debauchery, but I was surprised and moved by your honesty and openness about your story. What made you want to reveal so much about yourself?
I don't have a flattering story. I wanted to write a book for a long time, and it actually starts off, the chapter one begins with me in jail in Orlando serving a 10-day sentence for a drunk driving arrest, my second drunk driving arrest. And there I was. It was 1996. I'm in this big gymnasium-size cell with like 50 bunk beds. And I got some paper from one of the guards, and I began to scrawl out my life story. And I started it writing, they call me Steve-O. I'm thinking about switching back to Steve Glover because I'm not sure if I want a nickname when I'm famous. Mm-hmm. And at that point, I hadn't done anything to be known for. I had all my front teeth just badly broken. I was homeless. I was unemployed. I had nothing. My life was a genuine disaster at that point. And here I'm sitting in this big jail cell writing just all excited about how great it's going to be and how I'm going to be famous. And what else is interesting about that, and which is why I wanted to start the book with that, is that as I finished writing on each page, on both sides of it, I was passing it on to other inmates in this cell, you know, really sort of forcing on them, you know. And these guys were bored enough in this jail that they were actually reading what I wrote. But, you know, it's just interesting that, you know, anybody will tell you that if you're in jail, to keep your head down, not to draw attention to yourself. You're in jail, you know, mind your own business. But I've always had such a ridiculous need for the attention of others that I just couldn't follow that advice if I tried. And it's always been that way. And that's how it all starts off.
But being in that jail didn't stop you from taking drugs and
no,
drinking.
It did stop me from driving drunk. And ultimately, I decided that that being high and drunk was more important than transportation, and I gave up driving entirely. I went for 7 years without owning a car.
The book ends with your recovery from a life of excess and alcohol and drugs. Is this kind of self-revelation and honesty part of the process of recovery?
Sure it is. I mean, writing a book about it and you know, the whole commercial element and selling it and sharing it with the public at large isn't necessarily a conventional regimen for recovery. You know, I mean, I would certainly consider my personal work in recovery separate from this. But going through this process and looking at my life objectively certainly had the effect of resentments fell away. You know, when I looked at it objectively, when I really took a step back, things that had been bothering me for a long time that I felt resentful about, I just saw the futility in it, and I got a lot of gratitude out of it.
And resentment is what has been driving you?
Resentment's been an issue with me, and I think it is with a lot of alcoholics. You know, It said that resentment is the number one offender, which kills more alcoholics than anything else.
Well, your mother was an alcoholic.
That's right.
And that's another thing that is common among alcoholics.
Sure.
A parent who's an alcoholic.
It's in my family. Yeah, on my mom's side of the family, everyone on that whole family tree on my mom's side is alcoholic, addicted, gambler, suicide.
You think there's a genetic component there?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I don't think that necessarily matters. But I come by it honestly on my mom's side, all the self-destruction and the addictive personality. And then on my dad's side, interestingly, it's just a white picket fence deal. I mean, it's all scholars, Harvard zoologists, just, achievers and just all really, squeaky clean people. And so
he was upper management to Procter & Gamble.
He started out that way. And when I was 6 months old, the family moved to Brazil. My dad was the president of Pepsi-Cola Brazil. I grew up moving around from country to country. He ultimately was the president of Nabisco. He was a big corporate executive, and he traveled a lot.
Do you think that traveling played a role in this as well? Because you never really settled down.
I was never in one place for long. I was always the new kid in school, and I always wanted to make an impression really quick.
Is it easier to do some of these crazy stunts when you are loaded?
In some ways, sure. And certainly, if you look at our most recent movie, Jackass 3D, which I filmed entirely sober the whole time, you can really visibly, plainly see that I was dreading doing these stunts sober more than I'd ever dreaded them in the past, like significantly more.
But you did all your own stunts.
Sure, yeah, that's what it is.
Jackie Chan gets stoned before he
gets a good question. And hearing you ask, that's hilarious too. But, at the same time that I was dreading these stunts more than ever doing them in sobriety, I felt more eager to do them at this, I really felt more that just because I wanted to prove to myself and to everybody else that sobriety doesn't turn you into a dull, boring person.
But now that you're sober, do you ever look back on anything you did and kind of realize just how dangerous it was?
Sure.
And maybe that it was a little stupid of you to have done it.
Yeah, sure. I've been really lucky, and I picked my battles somewhat carefully. Considering what all we've done in these movies and shows, you would imagine that I'd be in much worse shape. Like, I've been to a number of chiropractors, and
I'll bet
they've almost invariably known. I've been familiar with my work, and then taken an X-ray of my spine, and come back and been really pretty amazed that it's not in worse shape. I'm physically in pretty good shape, and when people ask me a lot of the time if I regret, like what do I regret, and do I regret the things that I've done, and I can't say that anything I've done in my career. Do I regret? I mean, I'm most known. One of my trademark moves is with an industrial staple gun, stapling my scrotum to my leg.
It hurts me just to think about it.
I can see it in your face that hurt quite a bit. But I can't say that I regret that. I can't say I regret any of the stuff that I've, we've never been mean-spirited towards others with Jackass. It's always been at our own expense that we've entertained the masses. And there's something that's self-deprecating and that's endearing about it. And I don't regret the career. But what I do regret is a lot of things that I've done in my personal life. And really, with the drugs and alcohol, I went down a path that led to becoming a really mean-spirited, nasty guy. And I did a lot of things where I tried to hurt people. And where I look at it today, I really feel like the way that we treat others is a reflection of how we feel about ourselves. And with the drugs and alcohol particularly, I wound up feeling so badly about myself that I had nothing nice to say or do towards anybody else. And like I said, it was a reflection of how I felt about myself. And in sobriety, I've really deliberately tried to change the way I feel and act towards others as a way of building my own self-esteem and improving the way that I feel about myself. And that's why it's been so helpful for me to become vegetarian and ultimately vegan and to be concerned, you know, like just in my apartment where I live, you know, I've got like three big trash cans, you know, one for redeemable recyclables, one for non-redeemable recyclables, and one for trash. When you start like paying attention to that stuff, the actual trash is negligible, you know, and like by being deliberate about caring about the environment, by caring about animals, by caring about my health and, you know, how I treat others, it's just improved my life so much that I you know.
I think you're disillusioning all of your fans.
I probably am, and, you know, at the same time, you know, this book is, it's...
Well, first of all, let me tell, read the title and everything. It's called Steve-O, Professional Idiot, a Memoir by Steve-O Glover, with the help of David Pizer. And on the cover is a picture of you bare-chested with a piece of paper
gun, yeah.
Stapled to your chest. It says, warning, do not attempt anything you read in this book.
Right. And your first question was, you know, how, like, what made me want to be as honest as I was and share this, you know, these things. And it would be impossible for me to describe my life now and how I am now without being clear about what my motivation was. And my motivation to change myself for the better really came from it, my life getting so bad, you know, like...
But every kid, every class has a kid like you. The kid will stick a pencil up his nose hard enough to make it bleed just to make everyone laugh.
You know, and the creepy people in that scenario are the people who are laughing.
Yeah, well, but you did that stuff.
Sure, I would open up a salt shaker and eat handfuls of salt to try to win people's approval, and it always didn't work.
Do you think you had ADHD or something like that?
I'm sure that my because I was just always a handful. My parents, I think, tried to get me diagnosed with that, and no doctor would, you know. Right.
Like, but maybe you were not.
Maybe I wasn't. What I was afflicted with was an unreasonable hunger for attention.
So you became a skateboarder.
But
a lot of kids do, and they just never go anywhere with
it. Yeah, Dad won a video camera in a corporate golf tournament when I was 15 years old. And he just, we wasn't terribly interested in it. He won this camera, and he stuffed the box into his bedroom closet. And right away, I helped myself to this camera. I stole it out of Dad's closet. And I got to work immediately going around London, England, where I lived. I went to high school in England. And making skateboard videos. And I was a pretty sweet, you know, kid at that point. Like, I hadn't experimented with any drugs. I had this, you know, like, skateboarding was my drug. And then I went from high school to the University of Miami, and I took to jumping off the diving boards at the pool, which I did a lot more than go to class. And, you know, then this girlfriend that I had, she said, because I wasn't going to class, I was spending all my time suntanning, jumping off the diving boards and skateboarding. And this girlfriend I had, she told me that she was looking into her future, couldn't see me in it, that she didn't think that I was going anywhere in my life. So she dumped me. And
you jumped off in stilts at one point.
I did.
You were really
right.
Doing dangerous things.
Right. And when this girl broke, she broke my heart. You know, she dumped me. And at that point, instead of jumping off diving boards at the pool, I started looking for apartment buildings. I started jumping off the roof of apartment buildings into these shallow pools. And I remember thinking, I really wanted this girl to worry about me. I wanted her to think I was going to die. And what a, you know, this hobby that I'd had in making skateboard videos, I started filming all these crazy stunts I was doing to try to make this girl worry. And I noticed a difference, because the videos I made in high school of the skateboarding, people would be like, yeah, that's impressive, you made a video. But when I started showing them this footage of me dangling from 12-story balcony railings by my bare hands and jumping off these crazy apartment buildings, people genuinely reacted. They thought, they said, man, that is crazy. And by seeing these reactions of people to these stunts I was doing, I thought, man, there's a future in this, and I could really make a career out of just being a crazy maniac with a video camera.
And that's how you wound up doing Jackass on MTV?
That was how I got started doing the real crazy stunts, was trying to make this girl worry. You know, I started doing stunts. People reacted to it. I dropped out of the University of Miami on this mission to become a crazy famous stuntman. And I floundered around homeless for 3 years.
But you also went to clown school.
Right. After 3 years of being homeless and not really getting anywhere towards my goal of becoming a famous stuntman, I found out about Ringling Brothers and Barnum & Bailey Clown College. And I thought, you know, if I could get into this clown college and have the name Ringling Brothers to brag about, this would bring legitimacy to these stunts that I've been doing with my video camera. Which is hilarious, to go to clown college seeking legitimacy. But that's what I did, and it worked.
You also got a lot of tattoos, but we can't go into those, including a portrait of yourself on your back.
That's right. Yeah, I'll show you.
Wow, that must have taken years to do that. But we've run out of time, unfortunately.
Not to worry. It's been a real pleasure to talk to you.
The intervention's going to stick, you think?
So far, so good. Tomorrow will be 3 years and 3 months. And, you know, like anyone will tell you, it's a day at a time. So I can't speak for anything but today.
Stephen Stevo Glover, written with the help of David Peisner's Stevo, Professional Idiot, a memoir. It's published by Hyperion. Thanks for being with us.
Hey, thank you so much. I know you guys really rolled the dice having me on, and I hope you don't regret it.